Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to All Exits Closed. My guest today is Robert Maripol, who has, over the last couple of years, we've developed a pretty good friendship, and we've talked about national issues, and today we're going to talk about the election of Joe Biden and the defeat of Donald Trump. So were you on pins and needles on election night, Robert?
Well, yes, I was. But let me just, before I answer that, say that as the younger son of Julius and Ethel Rosenberg, whose, you know, my parents were executed by the United States government in 1953, and one of the principal architects of those executions was Roy Cohn, who was Trump's legal mentor and taught Trump to do the kinds of things he's doing now, I feel, you know, a kind of powerful personal connection to the Trump regime, and in a negative way, of course, and a powerful personal stake in having him leave office. So Tuesday night of that election, you know, was awful. You know, I had to consider the possibility. I mean, I knew all about the red mirage and about how the Republicans were going to look better and then the Democrats were going to come on. I knew that, but the reality of seeing it on TV and having to contemplate the possibility of Trump actually winning was just horrifying. And, you know, it was horrifying on a political front in terms of all the damage that he could do and the fact that if he won re-election, perhaps 2021 was going to be the first year of the Trump dictatorship. I also felt it on a personal level. I couldn't help but thinking, my God, this guy's going to do nothing about the virus. And the virus is going to kill us all, particularly older people like me with underlying conditions. And then I got a little down on myself. I thought, oh, you know, this terrible thing could happen to all these people. And here I am thinking of myself. But I'm a numbers person. And by the time Wednesday afternoon rolled around and I saw the voting trends, I pretty much became confident that Biden was going to win. And so I think I got over the trauma of election evening a little more quickly than some people did. And, you know, I've continued to follow the numbers, and I found them actually quite interesting. We are at the – right now, we are on the cusp of Biden – being 6 million votes ahead of Trump. He's like 5,984,000 votes ahead of him, something like that. Just another 15, 16, and there's still 3 million votes outstanding. And most of those are, a good portion of them are from New York State. For some reason, New York State has still to count 1 million votes. So one third of the outstanding votes come from New York, which is violent, you know, which is strongly anti-Trump. So it's going to be, it's not as narrow a victory as it might appear to be. But still, I had a rough Tuesday election night. And then it was very nice to be able to celebrate on Saturday, the following Saturday. But of course, it's not like that. Biden's victory is a solution to a lot of problems.
Right. So how do you think a Biden administration is going to fare?
Well, I mean, first we have to get to a Biden administration. I think we have an attempted coup on the part of the Trumpies. I don't think it's going to succeed. It's kind of bumbling. We're lucky that but it's still something could happen that would throw a monkey wrench into the process. But I think the most likely course is that Biden will take over as president on the 20th of January.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, I have a lot of concerns about that. First of all, by January 20th, who knows what state the country will be in? I mean, things could literally be unraveling. But beyond that, Biden continues to make all these noises about we want to unify the country. And, you know, when I look at that, it sounds like he's trying to do a repeat of what Obama did in 08. And it didn't work then, and it's not going to work now. And, you know, Biden is kind of a governmental institutionalist. He is attempting to put knowledgeable and competent people to fill up the bureaucracy. But his whole main thrust seems to be, let's get back to normal. And for him, normal was the Obama administration. And going back to the Obama administration at this point, I think is basically a political disaster for the Democrats and for the country.
What do you foresee if that does happen?
Excuse me, what was that?
What do you foresee if Biden becomes president and he follows the same path that Obama did?
Well, I think one of the problems I've said about Democrats over the years, and that I say it in a manner that, you know, sometimes people can't figure out what I'm saying, is that the problem with Democrats is that they lead back to Republicans. And sometimes people look at me when I say that and look like I have two heads. But what I mean by that is that Democrats say they're going to make changes. They're going to help the regular working people. They're not going to cater to the 1% there. Then they come in and they don't deliver on their promises because they're still beholden to the big corporations and because they're corporate Democrats and dominate the party still, and they won't let the progressive wing really take charge. And so they come in with all these promises and then they don't fulfill them, and that disgusts people. And their base stays away from the polls, and the Republicans come out. And, you know, I would say that unless Biden is much more dynamic and takes much bolder economic and political moves than Obama ever did, on even an order of magnitude greater, and is willing to risk major confrontation, unless he does that, the Republicans are going to do well in 2022, and the Democrats risk losing the House of Representatives. And if that happens, Biden will accomplish absolutely nothing or very little of any substance. And who knows what will happen in 2024. So I am not, you know, I would say that the brightest light on the horizon are the vaccines. It looks like there's a good chance that in the first half of this coming year, there's going to be a mass program started of inoculation, and a lot of people are going to get vaccinated. Now, whether the anti-vax movement is big enough, that vaccination program, from really being nationally effective, well, that remains to be seen. But for those of us who are going to follow the scientific advice and get vaccinated, at least our lives will improve. But the political picture, I would say, is going to remain problematic. And Biden is going to have to act in a manner that is a real break from the Obama administration past and is a real break from the political propensities he's demonstrated so far. In, you know, his birthday is coming up and he's going to be 78, you know, and they say you can't teach an old dog new tricks. He sure as hell needs a whole bunch of new tricks, and I'm not sure whether he's going to learn them. You know, I'm skeptical. I hope he has to be willing to confront, and he also has to be willing to investigate what Trump and his supporters have done needs to be challenged. You know, Biden keeps saying, I need to move forward. We need to move forward. No, we can't move forward unless we first look backward, because what happened in the last 4 years is qualitatively worse. I mean, when you look at what's going on today, I would say the politics of the people who were trying to engineer or acquiesce in the Trump attempted coup, you can draw a direct line to Southern secession. It is the same forces, the same kind of politics, and it is a division that has plagued this country for 160 years, more than 160 years. It really goes back to slavery and racism. And if we don't confront those issues, we are in for a very rocky, dangerous ride. And I would say the chances of an authoritarian regime developing in the United States over whether it's 4, 8, 12 years are quite great. So it doesn't mean it's going to happen. But Biden can't coast along on his victory and talk about national unity and going back to the way it was. If he does that, I think we're in big trouble.
It seems as though the party elders more or less picked Biden as the safest choice for them.
I think that's right. Right. I think they, you know, they went to the safest. And, you know, there are a lot of people who say, well, you know, given the election, it's not clear that anybody but Biden could have beaten Trump. And I don't know whether that's true or not. It's just very, very hard to speculate on that. All we know is that Biden did win. So that choice at least panned out. But, you know, that's the start of the process, not the end result. I mean, I think Wall Street and the big corporations are quite happy that Biden won. And they're going
right.
to, they're making out, a lot of them are making out like bandits right now, and they're going to continue to do so. You know, it's one of the things about what's happened in economically since last March is that the divisions in this society between rich and poor, which were growing markedly and were really pretty awful before the pandemic struck, that with the pandemic, it's gotten much worse. I mean, people who have investments in the stock market, people who have professional careers and are able through, you know, the internet, et cetera, to work from home, a lot of those people have ended up saving a lot of money. They don't have to commute. Their work, it's less expensive to do the work that they're doing. And if they have any investments or, you know, pension plan, you know, 403B and 401K pension plans, or they're making out very well. And that's the top 20% or 25% of the nation. But the bottom 75, they're in desperate shape. You know, those who have jobs are doing dangerous jobs and risking their health daily. And just barely scraping by, and lots of people don't have jobs, and all the benefits are running out, and they're in dreadful shape. And that's one of the things I want to say to your audience is one of the things that anybody who has extra money and can afford to make donations, I usually advocate people making contributions to organizations that bring about social change as opposed to just pure charity, because, you know, it's, we want to, the whole thing about, you know, if you give someone a fish, well, they'll have a good meal, but if you teach someone how to fish, they can provide for themselves meals indefinitely. Well, in the same way, but in this circumstance, as people, millions face eviction, as unemployment insurance runs out, as people run out of money and food, we all have to take a look at our local food pantries, and we have to support the most vulnerable among us within our own communities, because a lot of those people are going to be in absolutely desperate shape come December and January, and the government, the federal government, is going to do nothing to help them.
When Biden takes office and people are being evicted, when people are hungry, when people have no jobs, no money, and here we have a 78-year-old man at the head of government, what do you foresee?
Well, I think, you know, what I want him to do, I really don't know what he's going to do, but I think he's got to start by declaring a national emergency, which gives him all sorts of powers to organize the pandemic response. And then he can issue executive orders. He can forgive all student loans. He can do all sorts of things to ban evictions, deal with mortgage payments, extend unemployment benefits. Through executive orders, he can do a lot, especially because Trump did a lot. And, of course, the Republicans will probably scream bloody murder and take him to court, and he might lose some of this in court. And what he has to do then is really show that he's got guts and say to the courts, if they're going to prevent him from doing what is necessary to save people's lives who are starving, say to the courts, you've made your decision, now enforce it. In other words, that's exactly what Andrew Jackson, President Andrew Jackson, said to John Marshall way back in 1830-something. You know, Biden has to be willing to defy an obstructionist court, because the reality is, just as Trump has done, you know, the Supreme Court ruled about the DACA program and Trump has just ignored it. Biden is quite capable of President Biden could do the same thing to protect the American public from starvation. But I have real questions about whether he's got the guts to do it. What I want him to do and what I fear he will do is unfortunately two very different things.
Mm-hmm. Are you happy with Harris?
Harris is more dynamic than Biden. And that, you know, that's a plus. But, you know, she's a prosecutor. And we have yet to see whether she is really going to be any different from, you know, just because she's a person of color. Well, Obama was a person of color. Is Harris going to be a progressive influence on the Biden administration? I don't know. It's hard to say. And it's always hard to say how important the vice president is. And of course we don't know whether Biden will be interested in running again when he's 81 years old. And, you know, and Harris is certainly, if Biden doesn't run again, or if something happens to Biden health-wise between now and then, and Harris is going to be the number one choice for the Democrats in 2024. And frankly, I don't know how good she is. You know, if she can't inspire young people, that's a real problem. Because if you look at the demographics of the election, the future is more left. But you have to harness those people. The younger people turned out in greater numbers this time, and they made a difference. In fact, I would say that it's left-wing voters that actually brought Biden into office. It's the, you know, the African-American voters in the big cities, the Latinos in the Southwest, and in Georgia, too. the combination in Georgia. That's what got Biden elected, and that they represent the more progressive wing of the Democratic Party, and young people mm-hmm. came out too, and that trend has to continue if we are going to fend off a Trump resurgence over the next 4 years. I don't know whether Harris can do that. I don't know whether she has the inspirational ability. Certainly, I think the 2022 election is going to be a test of that, and I fear it's not going to be. I fear a bad result in that election, unless Biden acts in an uncharacteristically decisive and radical manner.
I was listening to Right Wing Talk Radio yesterday, and it seems as if the contention out there is that the voting machines were hacked, and they were hacked mm-hmm. in favor of Biden. And a lot of people listen to, you know, that type of radio. So if there's a number of Republicans who feel as if the voting machines were tampered with, the next 4 years is going to be as violent as the past 4 years. Would you agree?
Well, I think there's a danger of that, and I think that that's another thing that the executive branch has to act decisively about. Having armed militias roving around the country with their machine guns and pickup trucks, that's got to be stopped. There's nothing legal about that. And there has to be decisive action. And as long as there's no action taken against them, they're going to continue. And the voting machine thing is really funny because, you know, they're promoting this idea that somehow the voting machine software and program is a Venezuelan company that's connected to Hugo Chavez and Maduro. That's, you know, that given that the company is based in Denver, Colorado, and has, you know, is an American company, and that in some cases their voting machines weren't even used in the states that they're contesting. But facts are irrelevant to these people. I mean, that's really, they live in a bubble of where they believe lies that are told them constantly. And as it gets further and further removed from reality, they follow down the rabbit hole. And it's kind of hard to believe these folks. I mean, you know, you have people out there saying that, you know, this is all a giant conspiracy funded by all these people, including by China and Cuba and Venezuela and George Soros and Antifa. Antifa doesn't even exist as a coherent organization, and they certainly don't have any money. And yet people believe this. Well, if they're going to believe that, I don't know what you can do about that.
What do you think of the talk about Trump running again in 2024?
Well, you know, with Trump, it's all about money. If he thinks doing that is going to make him more money and keep him in the public eye and is going to be financially viable, he's going to float that balloon because that balloon benefits him, whether or not he actually plans to run. I think the problem for Trump is, you know, legal, is Letitia James and Cyrus Vance and the cases against Trump. And there really is a, you know, I don't think Trump is going to go to jail. I think he'll die before he goes to jail. But I think he will be in criminal jeopardy. Serious criminal jeopardy going forward. And the way he'll deal with that is the way he's dealt with everything. He will hire lawyers who will delay and delay and delay and delay and file motion after motion after motion in order to stretch this out for years and years and years. That will be his tactic. But his constant legal jeopardy, and plus the fact that he's deeply in debt, could bankrupt him. And that's going to throw a big monkey wrench in his 2024 plans. But right now, I don't know if he really plans 2024 or he's just using it to try to make more money.
Wow. So we have a couple of minutes left, and Election Day is just about 2 months away. You think there's going to be a lot of turmoil for the next 2 months?
I think so. I think that we'll see what happens with this latest Michigan gambit, with him inviting the head of the Michigan Senate and to D.C. Michigan law is quite clear. The legislature has to vote for the electors who of the certified, electoral college people. And Michigan's vote is not close. It's over 150,000 in difference. I don't think this gambit is going to work. But what happens when the Electoral College meets on December 12th? At that point, I think that's when it will no longer be possible for Trump to mount a coup. So I think the political turmoil at the top will ease off some. But I think the turmoil in the streets, people being evicted, people facing starvation, death, 2,000 Americans a day being dying from COVID, all of those things are going to make the nation in general, the general public, very volatile. And, when you have a very volatile situation, all it takes is a spark. Something could happen, some event that could happen, and that could be very dangerous. So I expect it's a fearful time. It's a very bleak time we face. We just have to endure and hope we get through it.
You and I are the same age. Do you ever remember a time in America when things were this bad?
No, I don't. I don't remember any time like this. I mean, if I look at the most turmoil I see in the late 60s, but, that was turmoil that was brought about by a lot of people trying to make positive change.
Right.
This is turmoil by people trying to take us back to the Civil War. And it's not only more tumultuous, it is a negative tumultuousness and very dangerous. And, we don't know what we face next.
Our time is up. So you have been listening to Robert Miracle. I'm Cynthia Pooler. This is All Exits Closed. And if you like this show, follow us on Twitter. Robert, it's always a pleasure to talk to you, and thank you, everybody, for listening. Have a great day.
Thank you, Cynthia. I always enjoy talking with you as well. Bye-bye.